Hi, everybody. This is your cousin Brucey. And you know, you're listening to the Fab Four Free For All with Mitch Axelrod, Rob Leonard, and Tony Triguato.
And welcome to another edition of the Fab Four Free For All, the podcast about the Beatles and Beatles related stuff. And joining me, I'm Mitch Axelrod. I'm your moderator for this show. And joining me, as they always do, and I'm so glad they do, are Tony Triguato.
Hi, folks.
And Rob Leonard.
Hello, everyone. How are we doing?
Everybody's probably doing really well, Rob, as of this taping, because what a time to be a Beatle fan, huh?
My goodness.
I mean, any time is good to be a Beatle fan, but I was going to say any time at all, but I won't do that. But quite frankly, we are in the middle of a weird time with the Rolling Stones releasing a new album and the Beatles releasing a new song. Supposedly, there's still another track unreleased that Paul is on.
Right.
So hopefully,
we'll get a deluxe thing.
Who knows? I mean, but okay. The album's great. And then we come to Now and Then. My goodness. I mean, it's been a long time since 1995 and Free as a Bird and Real Love. And all the rumors about Now and Then and Grow Old With Me and whatever. And it took all this time. And Paul has said in many interviews, well, you know, I'm going to go do it again. He said it, I think, in 97 during a Flaming Pie interview. He said it again in the Jeff Lynne documentary. And that's when he also started the controversy about George saying the song was crap and rubbish. But we'll get into that a little bit as well. But now, as of this taping, in October of 2023, we finally got the release.
November, sir.
No, but the release was October of 23.
Oh, I thought you were saying now of this recording. I was like, no, November.
Well, either now or then.
Nice.
Sorry. Yes. As of this recording, November of 2023, we finally got the release with the announcement of the release in late October. And we got the release of the mini documentary, the song, and the video in that order. So let's take you back a little bit, because I just did with Paul's saying he wanted to keep doing it, and then we'll discuss it all. You know, there were rumors that things were happening, and everybody, all the so-called insiders, were all aghast, and oh my goodness, you know, I know when it's coming out, and all this, all the rumors, red and blue as well, and quite frankly, we had to wait until late October when there was an official announcement. But the three of us were privileged enough to be invited to a listening event, which we usually do get invited before every new release. And we're very, very, very privileged to be invited because we never take anything for granted. You know, just because we're journalists, it doesn't mean we are entitled. So we appreciate everything that Apple and Universal does for us. And when we get invited, we tend to go because we know we're going to see some exciting stuff. So a few days before the actual event, we got an invitation, which is very rare because usually we get the invitation like a month or two before. And we got the invitation. We said yes. We went to a screening room in New York City. And I say screening room because you guys know whenever we go to these things, we go to a famous studio, Electric Ladyland, Power Station, all that good stuff. And because it's audio, but because they wanted to show us the video and the documentary, we ended up in a Dolby studio, Dolby Theater.
Now that apparently that studio, that was not the first time that room was used.
Yeah, we saw yesterday.
Well, you saw yesterday, but also too, from what I understand, that was the same room that was used when Capitol wanted to show or play, I should say, the Atmos Pet Sounds.
Oh, really?
So okay. Yeah, because a person that I'm friends with who was at the Pet Sounds.
Nice.
So yeah. So and there was no video. I don't believe there was any real video element to that. So I think they, you know, but it was the Atmos aspect.
Yeah, and so, you know what? It was fine because it was a small group. It's, you know, of heavy hitters, a lot heavier than we, you know, quite frankly. I know we're, you know, a nice podcast and we do a lot of good for everybody, but there were a lot of heavy hitters there. And, you know, we had to sign something saying we weren't going to say anything, which we gladly did. And I got to tell you, and you guys will attest to it too, I'm sure. It was a month before the actual announcement, and nothing got out. I'm so proud of all the, and I know it sounds stupid for me to be proud of everybody, but I'm so proud of all like the journalists who were there, because nobody blabbed and everybody could have, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Without and it's funny because we knew a lot of people that the showing we went to, and I'd heard that from a couple other people who I had talked to that said the same thing. Like, no one said anything. I can't believe it.
But well, that's what legality will do to you. You're signing a piece of paper or go to jail or never get product again, and you shut up.
but you know what? It didn't bother me. Even if I had known they didn't have an NDA, you know, it's okay not to say it.
Wait a minute, though. They've already said it was the last Beatles song. I mean, what the hell else is left? We should have just told everybody. No, I'm kidding.
But you know what, though?
It's the last one.
Normally,
what are they going to do to us, right?
What are they going to do to us?
Well, what are they going to do to us? They're not going to give us product anymore. We're not going to get invited anymore. Because you know there's going to be more of these things.
Persona non grata.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Two things struck me about it. First of all, and Rob, you brought this up at one point, or Tony, I forgot, one of you did. They didn't make us like put our phones in those little pouches, you know.
Yeah, I said that.
Because as you're right, because like anybody could have easily, you said that on the live stream, I believe, anybody could have easily just had their phone on when they said, all right, now we're going to play you the song. Obviously, it would have been lo-fi, but people would have
still, imagine you're the first one to play it, you know?
Yeah, I guess. But you know what? As Apple had said, they wanted to keep the integrity of the song of the event. And they were right. So that was weird. They didn't ask us, you know, even though we had to sign something, they didn't ask us to take our phones away.
Nope.
And also, normally, as most people know, when the three of us go to an event, right afterwards, we record a show either in the diner with us eating or in the car where we're beeping people in the city, or I am, because I hate traffic. But we weren't allowed to do that. You know, we were told, you know, nothing is to be said, because we could have easily gotten in the car and just, you know, and told, did a show right away and put it up. But
we would have basically spent a half an hour talking about the sandwiches. We went to this place, the three of us, and we had sandwiches.
And the food was good. Yeah. And actually, then I had a turkey sandwich.
Now, and then I had it right there.
Yes, I had one now, and I have one then. No, but it was, the event was cool. And I mean, you know, basically it was about an hour, and they showed us, you know, they told us what was going on. They also told us, just so you know, they had a big size picture sleeve of the cover, which we'll get into in a minute. Rob and I thought it was a placeholder, but and Tony, I think you thought it was a placeholder too. And then they told us, you know, look, this is going to be the marketing. This is going to be the release date.
Well, they spent, unlike any other pre-release event that we've been to, they spent a lot of time on the marketing.
Yes.
If you think about it, in previous things that we've been to, very little time was really spent on the marketing. And I think it was, part of it was just to enforce is a bad way of putting it, but reinforce the idea of just how much they were putting into this, just how much the desire was to make this special, and just how far they were going to ensure that.
Well, I think, Tony, the other important factor was that every other release has been a remix of an album.
Right.
And this, they told us right from the beginning, this is a new Beatles song. This, even though it's the last, they're treating it as a frontline single. You know, they're not treating it as like a remix thing or an old or a catalog product. They're treating it as a brand new single, which they should, because sure, it's selling like crazy, by the way, as of this taping. And that's why the whole marketing thing, because, you know, they're not going to, yeah, they did some marketing for Revolver and everything, some billboards, but this, they really went nuts on, because it is for all intents and purposes, a brand new single by the Beatles.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first time that we've really had outright brand new music.
Absolutely.
Since 95. And yeah, there are two things that I sort of thought were worth noting about that span of time is that we've talked about this a lot among ourselves. First of all, it's the first new Beatles release during the time of social media. I mean, that term didn't exist 30 years ago.
And that's
social
important.
Media. That meant nothing.
Yep.
And second of all, isn't the irony that here we are, and it's the first new Beatles release in how many years? And think of another major difference, and you and I are talking about this, Mitch and I were talking about this earlier on the phone, Rob, is that what's the big tangible selling item for this brand new song? Vinyl, which 30 years ago was not the case.
Well, I mean, no, 30 years ago it was with the anthologies.
The single did okay, but the single was not. The single was not a big deal.
Well, but the difference is now that, I mean, there was vinyl in 95, but they
it was on a slow. It was on a low.
I mean, right, now, and you had to find it. You had to go out and find
absolutely.
It.
Correct,
now,
yeah.
Vinyl outstrips CD sales substantially.
Well, look. Remember they told us? They said there's going to be no CD single.
Right.
Now, that's changed because I think people our generation want a single like that. Maybe they don't want the vinyl because it's kind of expensive. I mean, the CD single is going to be about $10 depending on where you buy it.
Right.
So that's not so bad. And I think that was part of it too. I thought the meeting was sort of an explanation of how the marketing is going to be different than the last time, meaning just don't go out and buy the album, the CDs right away. You know, we want you, though we didn't say it exactly, we want you to stream it. Because streaming is how you get on the Billboard charts. That's what Taylor Swift does. Right. And I think they want...
And downloads.
And I think they wanted to get that first. And that's why they said there'd be no CD single. They changed their mind, thankfully, because personally, I like a CD single.
And the demand.
And I think what they want to do is the first week, which is now, it's happening as we record this, they want, you know, streaming. They want downloads. They want that because that's how you get on the Billboard charts. Remember, Free as a Bird went to number 6, Real Love went to number 11, and those were based mostly or almost on individual sales. It was a cassette, and then there was a CD single. And that was the important
and
thing.
And the 45. Remember, there was a vinyl 45.
And there was, but I remember going to Tower when Tower was still open, and they had the cashier, they had Real Love for 49 cents on a cassette. And I bought two of them just because, well, it's 49 cents.
You're cheap.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
That's part of it, I think. That it's a different world that Apple lives in and that we live in as how, you know, when we went for anthologies 1, 2, and 3, they were record stores still. They don't exist anymore, so.
Well, you know what I mean. Coming back more and more strongly, Rob. I mean,
I'm talking about more like a Tower. I'm talking about Sam Goody.
You're right.
Yeah, the chains, yeah.
Those are gone. There are still record stores, and you and I and Mitch know where they are. But it's not the same where people waited outside at midnight to get, you know, Anthology 1.
Well, I'm gonna combat that, rebut that a little bit, because HMV in Liverpool and in London opened up at midnight. Because they had 200 people outside waiting to get it. So they physically had it. And then HMV all over London said that they had to put the records behind the counter because they only wanted one per person. And the store did not stop selling them all day and night.
Okay. For,
which is amazing. You know, and that's the physical product. And what's good is I know people complain about the different variations and the colors and all that, but everybody's doing it. So I don't want to hear that anymore because the Beatles are no exception. The Beatles should actually be the leaders in that, but they did put out a whole bunch and everybody I've seen on TikTok, and that goes to the social media because there was no TikTok. The Beatles are everywhere now, just like with Get Back a couple of years ago. So, but everybody's buying 1, 2, 3 copies of the clear, the blue marble, the black, the Red Target exclusive. So, you know, it's selling. It is selling really well and supposedly streaming well. As of this taping, it was number one on iTunes. It was number one on Spotify.
Yep.
You know, so it's doing something, you know, like Paul said at Washington, we released it. It didn't do anything. And now it's doing something. So thank goodness social media exists, because I think it gets out to everybody. It allows everybody to hear what's going on through the internet, you know, through TikTok and all those other Instagrams and Facebook. I mean, we've certainly promoted the hell out of it.
Well, Mitch, I want to praise you.
No.
And I know Tony will agree with me. You, on our Facebook page, Fab Four Free For All, you had everything going on in the last couple of weeks with this release. And then when it did get released, you were correcting people who were putting up false beliefs about how this was going to be released.
That's just my job. And I love it. So.
And I just want to say thank you, because
you
took over for that. And I appreciate it, just as a person who is a Beatle fan, but the fact that we all work together, I just want to say that because you did a great job with that.
Well,
and you also told people to calm down, which I thought was funny as hell, because, you know, some chat rooms will say we're imagining things that weren't going to happen.
Well, you know what? I've always said it. And come on, guys, we've always said that if we didn't have any listeners, we'd probably still be in a diner somewhere talking about the Beatles.
Yep.
Yeah, right. So guess what? Right. We're fans first.
Yeah.
And when I get excited. So you know what? You guys, unfortunately, you guys don't always have the opportunity to get on like I do. So because I'm working from home and I can, if I hear something, you know, right away, I can get on right away.
So any of Mitch's employers, if you're watching, just letting you know that, you know.
Sorry. He's goofing off. No, I do it at lunchtime. The problem is I have lunch all day.
Long lunch.
No, but you know what? It's as a fan, when I hear something and I get excited, the first thing I want to do is tell someone else, because if they can get like the Spotify 10-inch, you know, if they can get something like that, or they can get a collectible, or there's something that they didn't know and they don't know where to look, if I can help, great. So. And plus, it gets the word out there, too, because I genuinely like the song. Now, you know, we'll get into that. But so as far as the event, we were first played the mini documentary.
Yep.
Which you only heard a little bit of the song. But that documentary, 12 minutes, directed by Oliver Murray. I mean, I think it blew everybody away.
I think so, too.
First of all, it had stuff like George doing the little opening for Norwegian Wood, which we've never seen.
That was funny.
By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed, you mentioned Norwegian Wood, and I totally forgot that it was in the beginning part.
Yep.
If you look at the credits at the end, it says it's owned by Sony Music and MPL Communications. So somehow Paul is now owning some of actual Beatles songs.
Don't start now, Rob, because people are going to go off this and start yelling at Paul for, you know, because it's John who, whatever.
But they used to own it. You know, Northern Songs was John and Paul's company. And then, you know, they lost the rights.
Sony ATV and.
So.
You know what,
though? Fascinating, Captain.
And only you would notice that in the credits, by the way. But that's good. That's why we're here. But the documentary, we're not going to get into everything, but what's great about it, and this comes to a question you asked them, and I followed up, Rob, we saw so much Threedles footage that we've never seen.
Yep.
And we saw them recording now and then.
Yep.
And video even backs that up, because there's at least four or five scenes where they're recording now and then, and Paul is actually singing. So it's not, you know, it's not like they're faking it with AI. I wish that. Anyway, but so. And then Peter Jackson came out and said they found 14 hours of Threedle, so give it all to us.
Which I think it was a mistake for him to say that. I mean,
I think he quite honestly just said it because he was excited when we found
14 hours. Of course, we found, but you know, the truth is, not to be funny, but you know, 9 hours of it is them sitting and, you know, the camera was running.
Yes.
Nobody was getting up and going, oh, let's start now. OLED stop now. OLED start now. OLED
start, or it know. Could be.
It's basically like, 9 hours of, you know, somebody scratching their bum and somebody going, I'm gonna go get some water, you know, right. And, you know, lum-de-lum-de-lum. You know what I mean? So what is it of usable footage? You know, I mean, right. I'm sure that there's some
might
nice
be,
footage.
Might be 2 or 3 hours worth.
And you know what? If there is a redone anthology, you know, and we get more bonus footage from, you know, a George Ringo Paul recording session, great. But I think it's just my personal feeling, and I could be wrong, and I could be proven wrong. But anyway, but I just have a feeling that whole, oh, there's 14 hours of footage. That's just don't.
Well, you know what it could
don't
be.
Don't go running around saying
it could
that.
Be 2 or 3 cameras, and there's 5 hours from each one. And
exactly.
They're shooting all the same stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Look at it as how much. How, you know, there's, remember when the papers were, there's 500 reels of Let It Be footage.
Right.
I mean, Let It Be audio. Remember when the bust happened?
They're divided by 3 or 4.
Well, each of those reels were 15 minutes long, and there was A camera and B camera, and it meant that there was the same amount of footage that we already knew.
And there was overlap too, so.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But we did see some really cool Threadle footage,
yes.
Which we had never seen. And I thought that was great. I thought the orchestra part was great, you know, with them, they showed them doing the orchestration and they had to tell them that it was a Paul song.
I have to feel good for those people.
Correct.
Who were sitting at home, you know, knowing that it was coming. I wonder once they knew what they had to sign.
Oh, I'm sure they had to.
Like, can you imagine sort of once it got out and so, I mean, or were they just sitting at home and the light bulb went, what? You know, and they suddenly realized, you know, did they sign an NDA on the way out of the session? An NDA, by the way, folks, means we've been tossing that around. Non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
Basically means you're not allowed to say what you've seen
anything.
Or done or what have you.
Right.
But, you know, these people who are now here, they are in a Beatles video. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling if you think
yeah,
of it.
But it probably
person playing violin, you know, studio musician, and now all of a sudden I am in the video for the Beatles' last song.
Correct.
But they probably, as they said, they were told it was for a Paul McCartney track.
Right.
Paul is there.
Nice. Yeah.
And so, and Giles Martin is there, you know, they're co-producing it. They don't play the vocal. So
no.
they probably think it's a Paul McCartney track, which
of
isn't
course.
A bad thing either.
No, it's nice, but you don't know that you're going to be on a freaking world, you know, oh my God, a video that's been streamed 87 gazillion times.
That's a little different because not as many people would have streamed it for Paul if it was just
right.
a Paul thing.
Right.
And they also probably just got their session check and
yeah.
forgot about it.
Yep.
They probably didn't have to sign an NDA at all because they weren't told it was the Beatles.
Yeah,
so
where I'm going is once they found out that this new single was coming out.
Oh yeah.
There are strings and somebody must have been going, hey Phil, remember that thing we did a couple of months ago? You know, what the hell? You know?
Yeah, well that's you know, the charm of being a session musician.
You bet.
And guess what? They're they're very prominently featured in the
they
video.
Are.
Which
yeah.
we'll get to that. That
and
was
it's actually a wonderful segment. That whole
yeah.
bit, the orchestra is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
yeah they yes. you know, listen, and I'm glad Paul decided that he and Giles wanted to do it in capital to make it a little more Beatley, so to speak, instead of, you know, it could have been.
I didn't get that because they never recorded at Capitol Records.
Doesn't matter. It's still Capitol Records. It's not, you know, and they're not going to fly all the musicians they could have actually just gotten musicians for Abbey Road.
Yeah.
But might that have been too close, flying too close to the sun?
Maybe.
Might those people have gone, wait a minute, Paul McCartney, Abbey Road, Studio 2,
yeah.
what, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. But
would that been a little weird?
I mean, but, you know, to me, if you're going to talk about the Capitol Tower for recording, you're talking about Sinatra.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's where he recorded a lot of things.
You know, the mini doc is 12 minutes long. I wish it was longer because it was just so well done. And it's basically Paul narrating. I mean, Ringo's in there a little bit too, and they do
George
use some
is in there too.
But, right, but basically it's driven by Paul. And everybody's probably seen it by now. If you haven't, obviously go see it. It's worth it. But the part that got me, and I've told you guys this, is when Paul, three quarters of the way into it, when Paul says, what a privilege it was for me to have had these men in my life and to have recorded such a body of work with these guys. And I teared up at that point because they're selling us that it's the last Beatles song. And here's Paul almost admitting his own mortality or acknowledging his own mortality, or the certainly the Beatles' mortality, because after this, the Beatles are gone. I don't mean in legacy wise, but I mean, you know, the Beatles, for all intents and purposes, are never going to have another song. They might have releases till, you know, the cows come home 100 years from now, but it's finite. They made it finite. And Paul, by saying that, you know, I was thinking of myself too. I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to be 62. Paul's going to be 82. And he's putting a capper on like the Beatles. And I don't want him to, because the Beatles were with me my whole life. I don't want this to end. Not that it's going to, but, you know, for a few seconds or a few minutes, that's the way I felt. Like, oh, my goodness, you know, is something going on where we don't know about, where he's sick or something? And he's, you know, but obviously he's not. But it was weird. It was a weird feeling, very emotional because of the way he said it. And the finalness of, that's not a word, but
yeah, the finality.
The finality. Thank you.
Yeah.
Of quote, the Beatles. And then when we get to the video, obviously the end where they fade away, you're like, oh, crap. So, you know, documentary was great. No, the documentary, I mean, you guys saw the documentary. What'd you think?
I don't say this to be funny, but it's, you know, this came up as a quote joke among two friends who are fans within the last week. Very funny. Oh, does this mean that we're definitely not going to see Carnival of Light?
Oh, geez.
And no, but I really mean that. That came up.
No, I know.
And I said to both of them, yes, that is absolutely 1,000% what that means.
We don't know. We know.
I have to think, honestly, the fact that this has been so played up as the last Beatles song.
Right. But, if you think about Anthology 2, you can say 12 Bar Original was.
But that wasn't called the last Beatles. In other words, it was acknowledged 30 years ago when the anthologies came out that we were going to hear new songs. We saw that, you know, all the news that covered Sessions and talked about that, you know, oh, Sessions was going to happen, but now it's Anthology and now you're going to hear that means a lot and you're going to hear. So we got the idea when Anthology was happening that these were new Beatles songs. Now the term is the last Beatles song. That's it. We're not going to hear any more new songs. There won't be anything else that's going to be here. This is this new thing that's now going to be part of the Beatles canon. We're going to hear outtakes, obviously.
Well, outtakes, okay. That's different.
That's different. Okay. I mean, we're going to hear, you know, could we hear take one of No Reply? Hell yeah. But there's not going to be another new song. So I think, you know, it's strange to bring it up, but I'm just saying that in the course of this week, as someone who friends of mine look at it as a, you know, something of a Beatles historian or whatever, they're like, well, does this mean we're not going to get Carnival of Light? And my response is, look, man, I don't know anything more than you do, but I would, educated guess, say yes, that means we
would agree with that.
Definitely not, you know, ever going to get Carnival of Light.
But
it's not going to happen.
I'm going to be a glass half full kind of guy here, and I hope they don't
want it. But
anyway. Well, check this. I don't want it either, but check this out. The only other way that there could be any kind of song right now that would be another, quote, Beatles song,
yeah,
is if they find something in John's solo catalog that George worked on with him during the either, you know, the mind,
Imagine
stuff. If there's a song that they never finished and George and John are on it that Ringo and Paul want to finish, that would be the only way.
That. You know, some people have suggested that. Why are they picking this song? Why don't they pick a song that John worked on that rocked, you know?
Well, because George didn't.
Right.
George
hadn't worked on it. The people who wrote this stuff don't realize the part of this, I don't want to say selling of this song and the other two, Real Love and Free as a Bird, is that all four Beatles are on it.
Right.
And the only that's the important part.
The only question that I have.
So I guess we're getting to the song, by the way.
And the only question that I have, and I would have to really kind of go into this in depth, but you guys know that, you know, I collect the underground stuff pretty heavily. And there have been a number of versions of the Now and Then demo that have been floating around among collectors for quite a while now.
Yeah.
And I could swear, and again, I should have looked at this and listened to this before we did the show, but I could swear that the identical demo to the one that they used to do this recording has been in circulation without that horrible hum over it.
Well, here's why, Tony. And from what I've heard, that was those clear ones that were that you've heard subsequent to the one that they were given by Yoko. Those were part of what was stolen from Yoko, and she didn't get them back until after they gave the tapes to Paul and George.
Okay, but I ask this.
I know they still could have used
the underground's those. Not that deeply underground anymore. I mean, if someone was going to go back to work on Now and Then, and again, it's a little speculation, but if someone was going to start going back to work on Now and Then, you know, do we necessarily know that Peter Jackson had to use that crappy hum?
No.
Cassette
or no, it makes for a great story.
It makes for a great story, but did they get the cleaner demo?
They might have.
Between between then and now. But anyway.
Thank you for saying that.
I personally think that, you know, I've heard about what you said too, Tony. But it sounds like, why would they change the whole? I mean, let's say tomorrow they said, well, here's a tape that's the same thing without the hum.
Because they were starting from zero again, Rob. There was no, they still had those other, they still had the tracks that George and Paul had recorded. But
right.
I'm saying this is this would have been the identical demo, just without the buzz.
Yeah.
So they were starting from nil anyway, because they had to restrip all that vocal. You know, I mean, it's not like Peter Jackson went back to what they had started working on in 95 and just took that and messed with it.
Yeah, they could have stripped the cleaner one.
Yeah, so I'm wondering whether or not they did have the cleaner one, and that's why Peter Jackson was able to do what he did.
The one thing I will say is that during the, getting back real quick to the documentary, and then we'll move more to the song. The documentary, the part where Paul says they fed John's voice into the computer and bloop, bloop, and then a few minutes it came out and then and it was crystal clear. And then they played it for us in the theater, the Atmos.
Yeah.
That was so moving and so stark. I mean, like, we've all heard the demos. I mean, my goodness, we've heard them for years. And wow, all of a sudden, John is right there with us, sitting next to us.
And especially that part, you know, the parts of the demo where John's voice kind of trails off a little bit.
Yeah.
That's still all there. It's 100% there. I think hearing it in the studio, I mean, and the interesting thing about it is, and this is a combination of talking about the documentary, what we saw, the song. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
But, you know, I mean, the idea of John's voice, and you hear a lot of people are still saying, hey, look, man, of course, it's not, you know, recorded in a studio in 2023 clean. But the thing that's cool about it is that whatever the process is, you know, the MAL process, and Jackson being able to extract what he extracted, it has a Beatle-y feeling. It sounds like you're listening to a vocal track that's already that, you know, John said, oh, okay, put more of this on there and can put more of this on there. And, hey, George, can you do this and do that? And I want to sound like this. And that's what comes out in the end on a Beatle track.
Well, like even dub the mic on this, you know, where he says dub the mic on the piano. And it sounds almost like that. But I want to get to the point you just said, because that's a great segue to what some of the criticism of the song is, all right? Beatly. we've discussed it sometimes, but people are saying, well, it's not Beatley. It's definitely a John song that the other guys finished, and there's no George on it. Blah. First of all, let's get to George. There's all evidence in the world in the video that George played on this, electric and acoustic. I don't want to hear George didn't play on it. Yeah, you may not hear his backing vocals, but he is on it. Don't even start on that, because there's proof in the video. The second thing is the Beatley thing. People, well, it's not Beatley. What makes a song Beatley? Because it was on a Beatle album when they were together, so that it's Beatley? Or is it harmony? What is it? Because what's the difference between, and I'm not saying success-wise, I'm just saying Beatley-wise, what's the difference between this song and Yesterday or Across the Universe? Is Yesterday Beatley?
I'll tell you what it is, Mitch. It's literally, not to sound ridiculous, I'll tell you what it is by not telling you what it is. Okay. It's the X factor. It's the it factor. It's like anything else. Something that's Beatley is when you say something's Beatley, it's either used by one of two types of people. Really, 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 really casual Beatle fans who know some of the, like, they love the early hits.
Yeah.
The early hits all have a feel to them. My sister falls off at Sgt. Pepper, because everything before that was more, in her eyes, Beatley.
Okay.
Hardcore Beatle fans look at it, and to me, it's, what's a song that was Beatley? A song that was recorded by the Beatles in the canon in the original set of albums and singles. No matter how you slice it, hardcores may say they like or dislike Free as a Bird and Real Love, but I don't think too many people really look at that and say they're Beatley. There's a
question, though. Yesterday was recorded by Paul and a string quartet. The others were not on it.
But George Martin produced it.
And the Beatles were there when they did record it.
And the Beatles were there when they did it.
I think part of the deal is that we're so used to saying, well, that would have fit on Rubber Soul, or that would have fit on Revolver.
Good call. Good point,
and
Rob.
We can't place that, because these are individual things. Like Real Love and Free as a Bird and Now and Then. You know, where do you put it? I mean, I could pick things out and say, well, Now and Then would have been nice on, you know, Abbey Road, and Real Love would have been nice on Rubber Soul, and Free as a Bird would have been on the White Album. You know, to me, but at the same time, you don't have that. These are three individual songs. Now and Then is a big song, because I think it's getting more press than even in 95.
Because
of the way it sounds, and has new technology helping out the recording, and everyone thinks it's AI when it was only a little bit used just to separate John's vocal and the piano. So the people say, well, these songs aren't Beatles songs. They are Beatles songs. You know,
you have to remember too, though, Rob, that one of the reasons why Now and Then is getting so much press, and why Now and Then is getting promoted so heavily, is that Real Love and Free as a Bird may have been part of the new session and the new this and the new that, but the idea of Real Love and Free as a Bird's releases were used, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but were used by the Beatles organization and by the Beatles to also promote the anthology.
Sure. Right.
So you also had the fact that the excitement of Real Love and Free as a Bird was tempered by the idea that you put on, you know, disc two and, you know, oh, crap, there's a version of And Your Bird Can Sing with them cracking up laughing, or, you know, I mean, there were other new Beatle things to be
had. Right.
Whereas with Now and Then, you know, it had to be hyped this high, because this is it. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, Red and the Blue coming out are very cool, and, you know, we're excited as hell for all that. Great. But that's different than Anthology 1 and 2, you know, all new Beatles material.
Oh, sure. Right. And I also think, just think about it, in 1995, the fact that you have three Beatles in one room working on a track, which hadn't happened since 1973.
Of course.
And the fact that Paul and George are in the same room playing together, where we've heard things over the years that maybe that wasn't ever going to happen.
Yeah, that hadn't happened since what? Sumi Suyu Blues, right? That they played on together. I'm kidding. But
you know, anyway. I mean, you know, I remember when George said, well, I'd rather work with Willie Weeks, you know, instead.
Well, Willie Weeks was the first choice to do Real Love and Here's the Bird. But Paul was just, you know, too forceful.
That was 8 days a week.
8 days of Willie Weeks, yes.
No, but you know what, though? The harmonies of Now and Then, I Miss You, those are Beatles. That's Beatles harmony. Sorry. It is.
No, I agree.
I mean, and we also have to. Well, no, but we also have to remember, guys, that, you know, another friend of mine said it doesn't have the Beatle magic. And I keep saying these are 80-year-old guys. All right. I know John wasn't 80 when he recorded it. He was 38 or 37, 39, whatever. But these are 80-year-old guys. Nothing they would have ever released, even if they were all together as the Beatles right now, would have ever captured that moment in time of Beatlemania.
But going back to that, though, Mitch, like we're talking about, like, is it Beatley? Does it capture the Beatles magic and all that? And Rob, you're talking about where would they fit? Really, if you think about it, guys, there's only really one place that all three of those songs could have possibly, quote, fit. And that was Milk and Honey. I mean, there's no, and I don't say that to be humorous, but there's no Beatles home for those three songs.
No, there's not.
Now and then is it's a pretty song. I mean, you know, I like it very much.
It's been on Double Fantasy.
It's grown on me. You know, I don't even know about Double Fantasy. Double Fantasy had some more edgy, you know, I think Now and Then would have fit on Milk and Honey. You know, along with the other two.
That's an interesting choice. I mean, Real Love, John had a list of stuff for Double Fantasy, and he had that song as one of the songs he wanted to do.
Right.
For Double Fantasy. He didn't do it, of course, but it was on a list that was part of some John Lennon show in the city a few years ago. So,
yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, the Beatles, you know, they're still the biggest selling act, and they're still number one according to all the charts and different things, but it's tough to say, is it a Beatles song? Yeah, if all four of them are on it,
that's precisely.
You know, that's the way to look at it. And that was very important to Paul, because, you know, you're not going to take a song that George isn't on. Like, you could have taken Grow Old With Me. You know, here's a song that John, you know, you speak in Milk and Honey, that ends up on Milk and Honey. Then, you know, the Beatles or the Threedles get that as part of their four song thing. They decide not to do it because it had already been released. But then what happens? John Lennon anthology, Yoko goes to Giles and George Martin. Hey, can you put a string quartet on it?
Right.
And all of a sudden the song changes. And maybe they could have gone back and done that, but they weren't. And then Ringo ends up recording it for one of his solo albums with Paul on it. So
now, but I mean, you know, it's funny though, Mitch, going back to your point about yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, talking about yesterday, is it Beatley, is it not Beatley? But it's the idea too that, you know, take the three songs, you know, the three songs that, you know, Real Love, Freeze a Bird, Now and Then. Take Yesterday, take, not to be funny, take Tomorrow Never Knows. That sounds like nothing else in the Beatles catalog.
Right.
Take Revolution Number 9. Take Within You Without You, put them all together, and then you go, okay, and you go to an alien life form 200 years from now and go, here, there are these three, there are these 12 songs, you know, after you compile a bunch of them,
right?
And they're going to pick out Now and Then, Free as a Bird, and Real Love and go, ah, that's the Beatles.
Right. I agree.
Because the three songs, at least, I've got to say, Free as a Bird and Real Love now, my opinion, sound a little dated. I'm a huge Jeff Lynne fan. I'm a huge ELO fan. I'm a huge Traveling Wilburys fan.
I agree.
But those two songs have Jeff Lynne's mark on them.
Yes.
I think the reason why Now and Then, I think I can look at it and go, it's a little more Beatley, is because of the string arrangement.
It's a Martin production. And when Giles or George, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
It's a Martin production and it's different. You know, I still think anybody who anybody who is comparing this to the Beatle classics is they, I understand their passion, and it doesn't mean you're any less of a fan if you don't like this song. Big deal. You don't like it. It's not going to be for everybody. But please don't. The Washington Post had a column that said it's fine, but not when you put it up to songs like Strawberry Fields Forever and I Am the Walrus and Yesterday. And I'm like, why are you doing, you're judging the Beatles against themselves 50 years from when they did the inventive stuff. These are older guys who would never do that again.
But also, the song just came out.
That's their job.
Into the system a little bit. You have to listen to it for 10 times or five times or whatever.
And
whatever. I mean, you got to absorb the song sometimes.
I got a good laugh out of, I read somewhere where somebody made a comment and they said, you hold it up to the Beatles classics and I Am the Walrus and Strawberry Fields, but hey, you know what? It's still a better song than You Like Me Too Much.
Well, I don't agree with that.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, one person's comment, but it was funny. You know, it's like, you know, if you and I sat there and went, well, you know, is it better than what you're doing? You know, is it better than, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, you hold it up against a classic.
I'm sure
Beatles
it is
song.
Better than some of them.
Look, I was saying when I heard it at the event, I was blown away by it just to hear it.
Right.
And we have to go with the comments from a lot of people that it's amazing that it exists.
Right.
It's amazing that it happened. The determination of McCartney and agreements from, you know, Yoko and Sean and Olivia and Danny, and the participation of Ringo, that it happened. And is it, and you know, you were saying, is it the best Beatles song? No. Nope. Is it John's best writing?
Nope.
No. Is it a fitting end to legacy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
It is. It really it is.
And also, Tony, you know, as you mentioned before, you know, both Paul and Ringo in their 80s, and they easily could have died somewhere along the line and never got to work on this. You know, that's something also to think about, that, you know, the technology caught up to what they had to do to clean it up. You know, there's a whole step in this. If you go back the last couple of years with Paul, because Paul, you know, is starting to look back at the Beatles, and he's a lot more humble about it too. You know, like when he said, what a great thrill it was to work with these guys, these other individuals, when he said that. And if you think about it, this goes back to that show he did with Rick Rubin, where he sits and listens to tapes and Rick's interviewing him. And he said, sometimes I can be bossy. Well, yeah, we know that, Paul.
But look about Get Back.
Yeah, and then Get Back, you find out, you know, is he that bossy in that? Yeah, a little bit, but not as much as we've all seen. But the Get Back thing sets him up with Peter Jackson. He creates, or his company creates, this malware thing that allows things to be separated.
Don't say that, Rob.
Malware.
Malware means a virus.
Malware is a virus.
It's mal.
I'm sorry.
Technology. The malware means something bad for your computer or a virus.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, yeah, I'm such an expert on computers.
Machine audio learning. Rob, hang on. Machine audio learning, so people know that.
Okay, so Mal and not Mal Evans. they meet Peter Jackson. He gets this thing where it separates stuff that we now hear very clearly from the Get Back sessions. That leads to this. If they don't meet Peter Jackson and have him do the Get Back, maybe they don't think or know about this piece of equipment. And, you know, maybe it doesn't happen. I mean, it's just amazing how everything sort of lined up for this. So, it took a couple of years to start. And then, you know, now we're at this point, you know, the end of the Beatles, so to speak. But we know it goes on for a long time.
Yeah, the legacy. Yeah. But so let's talk about George, because everybody is all up in arms. You know, George said it was crap. And George said, I hope people take my crap demos and make them into hit songs. And Paul started it by telling everybody that George said it was crap. Booker Robeson. But quite frankly, you know, let's discuss that, because we'll never know. I don't care what anybody says. Only Olivia probably knows, and maybe Danny. But we'll never know what George really thought. He probably thought it was crap. It's not a great written song, okay? Lyrically, it's not great. He probably thought it was crap. But he also probably thought the quality was crap, too, and he didn't want to keep going. But he was going enough where you see him in the video and in the documentary.
Smiling and playing along. Yeah, he doesn't look like anybody's pulling teeth there. He's not, correct. He's not begrudgingly going, here we go.
Yeah, right. I'm doing this for you, Paul. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And so, yes, we know he said it was crap, but Olivia said, and George says, right in the documentary, George says, John's voice is there to cherish, and I'm sure that he would have joined us if he could have. So if George is saying that about John, there's no reason to believe that George wouldn't have joined Paul and Ringo to finish this off if he was still alive. So that's number one with the crap stuff. And you know, okay, he might have thought it was crap at the time, but I'm sure he would have tried to finish it in some way. The second thing is Olivia and Danny came out with a statement saying he definitely would have enjoyed doing this. And then when you get the physical product, there's a sheet inside, and it talks about Olivia said, and when this goes to the back cover with the clock, Olivia said that George had bought a clock in 1997 in Providence, Rhode Island, probably when Danny was going to Brown University. And it had Now and Then on it. And Paul called and said, hey, you know that song we never got to do, Now and Then? And she said, yeah, I remember it. And he said, well, we want to do it again. And she sat there and she was staring at the clock that said Now and Then. And she said, you know what? That was my way of hearing that George is saying it's okay. So if Olivia and Danny give their blessing that it's fine and they let it come out, because they could have easily vetoed this right from the beginning and said, George said it was crap, it's not coming out, don't bother doing it. Then you know what? If they gave their blessing, who are we to try to interpret what George thought about the song? It's done. George played on it. He's definitely on it. And they gave their blessing. So enough already with that.
Oh, no, I agree. And you know what got me also about that? You know, if you remember when in 95, when Free as a Bird comes out, there was an interview with Paul, and he said, the first thing I thought was, my sweet Lord. You know, he said that about how George's playing was going to be, maybe.
Right.
And now what does he do on this song? He purposely plays a George Harrison type of solo on the slide.
Right.
So it's
an homage.
If you were told that Paul did that, you would say, "Oh, that's George."
It's a different style. A lot of people on the Facebook boards that don't know or aren't looking.
No, it sounds
George's solo.
It sounded just like a real George solo.
People who aren't, you know, musos, but they're fans now. Oh my God, at least we know George did the solo. And then I've seen people have to correct them.
The question is,
what if that clock that Olivia was looking at said Carnival of Light? What would she have done then?
Or it said, tell Paul to F off.
George bought this clock in Providence, Rhode Island
that said, tell Paul
to F off.
And she's staring at it when Paul calls. And he says, oh, George told me to tell you that.
Even if it just said F off, she went, you know, Paul, I'm going to tell you.
Well, what happens if it was a cuckoo clock? You know, cuckoo.
And George just said he thinks you're nuts for doing this.
Exactly. Don't do it. Well, we talked about the back cover, which is that clock. And, and also I had put on that there's a possible Easter egg on there, because it shows the hands at 11-2 and the dominoes say 2 and 3. That's the release date, 11-2-3. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about the cover for a minute. I don't want to languish on it, because the actual cover done by Ed Ruscha, and I always want to say Bobby Boucher from the Water Boy, but it could have been because it looks that way. But Ed Ruscha is an American artist currently with an exhibit at the MoMA, Museum of Modern Art. He's a very famous artist. He worked with Paul before. Now, we know this is a Paul Vanity product, so, you know, Paul probably got it and got it passed by the others. A lot of people have said it looks like the angles of the red and blue when you compare. I think when we saw it, we all thought it was a placeholder. We were hoping it was a placeholder. And it's, you know what?
You know what, everybody in your collection, flip the damn thing over.
Right. Unfortunately, quite.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, we all admit the cover sucks. Okay, it does. It's, to me, it's not fitting of the last
Beatles.
Wow. I'm sorry.
For all of us, Mitch.
No, but I mean, you know, it looks like I, you know, with a stencil could have done it, but.
Yeah, I could have, like, you could have done that in Canva in about 12 minutes. Oh, look, here's the words now and then.
12 minutes. You take a long time. But I, and the cover doesn't even say Beatles on it. The back does. It's weird. I would have liked anything else.
Can I toss something out though?
Yeah, sure.
You've got four people.
Yep.
And I don't say this in any way to be derogatory.
Yeah.
None of the three of us, the three of us in this screen right now or on this audio recording are into modern art.
Right.
In any way, shape or form. You've got four people who are all into modern art, aesthetic art, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, wasn't George the one
who said George, avant-garde clue, right. I know. But, you know, I mean, George liked some funky things and some, you know. But I think that putting a piece of modern art on the cover was a hell of a lot easier to get an agreement and get clearance on than them to have found a photo that everybody of those four would have agreed on and said, that photograph of the Beatles is fine for the final recording of the Beatles being released. It would have gone around. Olivia, well, no, I don't know. There's not enough George. Oh, but John's at a bad angle. Oh, Paul, I had gas that day. Oh, very good. You know, whatever it was, there would have been 8,000 reasons why not to use every single photo that was submitted for use on the very last Beatles single. So what do we get? A conceptual piece of art and a clock.
Okay, so let me.
And also, too, you're not going to show the Beatles at 80.
No, well, only two.
Absolutely not. But
on the video, they do.
But on the single cover, that's going to be, you know, you're not going to show the two Beatles now. No,
but you want to know something? Time out. Did you see the picture that they used for the to announce the video with the four?
Yeah, the four individual of them. Yes.
That could have been a cool single cover.
It could have. Yeah, it could have.
I would have liked in the video. There's the shot of the four of them, together. You know, George is wearing the pepper, and John is pointing to to Paul as his singing.
Yeah.
That would have been to me the cover.
It could have been. Listen, the only thing I will say about this is that, or the last thing I'll say about this, because I don't want to go too much on it, because it's what's inside that really counts, the actual music. But when you go into a store, and Tony, I have to say, it is in a lot of stores now. It's in Target, it's in Walmart, it's in a whole bunch of indie stores. When you go in and you see that, it doesn't say the Beatles on it unless you have the hype sticker.
The sticker has
the Beatle logo on it, so you know it's the Beatles. But a lot of stores, what they're doing is exactly what you said, Tony. Target, I think a lot of them are flipping it so you see the Beatles with the clock, because then you know. Sure. But and that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. I mean, it doesn't really matter as long as you buy the thing and listen to the music.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I would have done something different, but you know what? You know, when they picked Real Love's picture, that's from 65. You know, how do you
brush out the cigarette and he's still sitting like this?
It's I know that. And you know, Free as a Bird was a drawing of John's of a bird, so
the guy holding the birds.
So I mean, and the back was the same because it was matching the anthology,
right?
The way they did that, and maybe they could have done that too, made the back the anthology type of
thing. You don't want to repeat that.
You know what? You know,
it's connected to it's connected to the red and the blue, Rob. If anything, what you were going to do is you were going to put the back cover of the, you know, make the back cover the front of the blue album,
or
they connect it to anthology.
Well, either that or they put the promo. They did a promo CD for the red and the blue where they had, you know, your earlier Beatles on top of the later Beatles in the same stairwell.
Right. Yeah.
You could have just done that.
Yeah, they, I mean, there's a lot of things they could have done.
Yes.
Or they could have done what they did in Great Britain for literally the entire Beatles run. There were no picture sleeves. You know?
Yeah, well, like, you know what's funny? Do a pull-out on the balcony shot. Do the young Beatles, the 1970 Beatles, and then the, like you said, those four, the John at 40 standing sideways, right. Paul and Ringo now, George and, you know, looking like he did at the Threedle sessions.
Yeah, that would have been nice. That could have worked too.
Or, anyway. You know what? Or, to make it really classy, you could have just put the Beatles bass drum head with the drop logo.
Yeah, well, there's just a lot made of
the Beatles. I mean, just a round drum head that's so iconic, and that would be the end of the, you know what I mean? Whatever, it's fine. Again, it's the music. I must tell you, on our page with the posts that I've done, we must have had 400 to 500 separate comments about the damn cover, to the point where I had to put up something saying, it's the cover, get over it. Yes. But people are still right now saying that cover sucks. It's like, okay, anyway, let's get to the.
Remember, the Beatles once released an album that just was a white cover.
There was nothing on that goddamn cover. Nothing.
Sorry, nothing at all.
Including my Fran Drescher.
But let's get to the video because the video has been very divisive.
Well, let's talk about the song first. We should go to the video.
Well, we did.
We did talk about the song.
Really?
We talked about it enough. Okay. All right. All right. So, you know what, Rob? I'll satisfy you by saying this. Right now, there's a video going around someone did where they finished the song with the bridge.
Right.
And I hate it. I don't – the bridge doesn't fit.
No, it doesn't.
Everybody is saying, oh, my goodness, there's no bridge. It needs that. I don't want to lose you.
Where is that confounded bridge? Sorry. Use that one. Fans just went, ooh.
But I'm feeling groovy. That's a bridge reference.
Yeah, anyway.
But the – you know, Free as a Bird is a verse, verse, bridge, bridge. That's all it is. And the bridge is sung by two different Beatles. There's no chorus to Free as a Bird.
No,
right.
So at least this has Now and Then as a chorus twice, which I like. It's a very moving chorus. So I don't need the bridge. And it's 4 minutes long anyway. It doesn't matter.
Right. But they also have the what I think carries the song is the orchestra. I really think that Paul was right about putting that orchestra there because it gave it a reflection of the song and the Beatles. You know, now maybe someone else who doesn't know the Beatles might not feel that, but to me, there was a certain reflective part of that orchestra.
That idea too of the orchestra is what contributes to the quote Beatley aspect.
Yeah, yeah, and also you know. The song itself was heard in the Lennon musical in 2004 or 2005, whenever it was.
At the Broadhurst Theater.
Right, and so it was out there, if you really...
But it was I Don't Want to Lose You at the time, yeah.
Right, that was the difference. It wasn't called Now and Then. And that section, as you said, was taken out. Personally, I think it sounds better, like you said, without that section. This was pieced together as a song, but it all connects. You know,
it works.
There's look at what John did with when he did Double Fantasy, when he started to take bits and pieces from different demos and he made one, you know, like starting over, you know, is from a couple of songs. And he said, okay, this sounds good together. And he cut out parts. And that's what happens. That's why it's a demo, not the full recording.
Listen, they've pieced stuff together before. Look at the medley. Look at the A Day in the Life. I mean, you know, they've pieced stuff together before.
Right.
Also, yeah. What I love about the audio, and I told on our page, you have to listen to it a lot because the first time it's so emotional and moving, and you're like, whoa, that just got me. I didn't even realize that there's high harmonies, background oohs and ahs on the second chorus when it first starts. I didn't even realize it for the first 10 times I heard it. Then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, damn, there's harmonies up there. Wow, that's cool. And then the little tiny guitar licks that are George – in the second verse, and also they sped up the song a little bit. It was proven. It went from 80 to 88, whatever that means in musical stuff. But they did speed it up a little. So it's not, you know, it starts off as a somber song, but as soon as the orchestra comes in and the Now and Then, it soars. And when it soars, it becomes just a different animal, and it goes, it takes it to a different place. And I have to tell you, I still can't find where the Eleanor Rigby stuff is. I love the little staccato strings that they did the arrangement, because Ben Foster also worked on that with Giles and Paul. But the because, you can tell at the end that it's because. But and I think I hear some oohs like from Here, There, and Everywhere as well. But it's so brilliantly done. And, it, you know, again, it's not the best, but I'm so glad that we got it. We got it. It and we finally don't even have to think about it anymore. We got it.
I do have to be completely 1,000% honest in that, you know, I really liked it when we heard the audio at the playback session. I loved it when I heard it over the video.
Oh, yeah.
But I do have to be honest. The first couple of times that I played it, I did have to, and I know you said, Mitch, you didn't notice it, and I get it. Maybe it's just me. You know, individual people's ears pick out unique things.
Sure.
And for whatever reason, Ringo's vocal in the chorus, when the harmony comes in, I had to hear the song 4 or 5 times for it to not be jarring to me anymore. No disrespect meant to Ringo, but the now and then, like that real deep one.
Yeah.
With Ringo's tonality.
Right, yeah.
Actually threw me. To the point of, like, I went, ugh, like this when it came in.
It didn't throw me, but I know what you're talking about.
I found it jarring. I found it not.
I found Paul's old man voice jarring when he's singing. Because the part where he says, "We'll love you," where he added that, that's obviously from, it sounds like it's from 95. Because he's not warbling, and I'm not disparaging Paul's voice. That's not where this is going.
Right.
But it was a little jarring to hear the with him when he's singing. But now it's endearing, because now it's now and then. I mean, I know we
can but I, you know, poignant. Just to say, and now, you know, now listening to it, I've heard the song a bunch of times, and there were certain, you know, Beatles songs when I was young where I'd listen to it and I go, "Well, that's a little odd," you know. But then you play it through and you go, "Oh, I like that." You know, and now I dig it, and I have that vibe of, yeah, this is them now doing what they do. This is Ringo and Paul now.
Right.
That's cool. You know. But
Tony, the weird thing is, like, at 10 a.m. our time on the 2nd when they premiered it, I was in the car and I knew they were going to premiere it. And obviously I listened and it sounded amazing. And I was tearing up because they built it up like, now the Beatle world premiere of a new, like MTV used to do when they premiered a video. And it got me, and that's fine. And there's a lot of great, I posted this girl named Jenny who just really reacted on the spot, and it's so moving. You have to watch it, go to our page. But what I bought the, even though I bought it from the Beatles website, I went to Target, and my wife went to Target and got me the red 12 inch single. All right. And it's very heavy, by the way. It's really a nice piece. I put it on my stereo and it blows the radio away. It blows the internet away. I listened on my stereo and heard things again. And that was just yesterday tomorrow. I heard everything. It was so clear and so beautiful. And also I have to say, you know, it's not just for the quote alta cacas, the old people, this song, because my daughter is 20 years old today on this recording, by the way. Happy birthday, Stephanie. But
happy birthday, Steph.
Thank you. But her friend, thank you, Rob. Her friend Melody, her whole family loves the Beatles. They named their kid Lennon and Melody, you know, whatever. But she told me the other day that they all gathered around and waited for the Beatles song to come on. I mean, this is a 20-year-old, and she was talking to me last night while she was here about the Beatles. 20-year-old girl talking to me about the new Beatles song when most people don't give a crap, or that's what people are saying. Oh, my God, this, nobody outside of Beatle world knows this thing exists. That's crap, because it's been everywhere. It's been on every network. They had a story on it in every paper, on every whatever articles. But to me, that's the heart of what's going to keep the Beatles going. Even a 20-year-old is loving Now and Then. And it's not the best in the Beatles catalog, but it's being accepted as a Beatles song. And it
also, one of the things they did, iHeartRadio here in America, premiered it at 10 o'clock on all their stations.
Right, every single station.
And that includes the talk stations. The WOR and the City played it. Z100 played it.
Yeah, everybody. So,
and Q104 played it once an hour, which I found shocking that they did this because they're not playing the new Stones record, which they should be. Yeah. But I was happy to hear that. You know, they said we're playing, and WFUV did it also every hour. So I was very impressed that that happened because
it still is the Beatles, Rob.
I know that, but it's sometimes it is the Beatles, but it doesn't always mean that everyone picks up on it.
So, you know, and the one thing I do want to say also, I was thinking about this, and it's kind of sad. And I mentioned it on the Two Legs podcast, which you have to go see, listen to, by the way. It's a very good podcast with Tom and Andy. And I said this, as long as, and it must have been weird for Paul, because as he says, Now and Then languished in the cupboard, right? Until they went in 2022. And in Paul's mind, and I'm not saying I know anything about what Paul's thinking, I can only imagine it. As long as that was still in the cupboard, the Beatles as a band were still living. Because he could always go back, and with Ringo, as long as he and Ringo were still living.
Right.
They could always go back, and George and John were on a song that they could finish as the Beatles. But once they finished that song and took it out of the cupboard and finished it, there's no more. So, you know, I'm sure.
Do you think, and I know, and again, I'm not putting it down just as you were saying earlier, but do you think it has to do with the idea that perhaps Paul is acknowledging that, you know what, my voice isn't necessarily what it was.
Right.
You know, God bless him, Ringo's still with us. He's still playing the drums. You know what? I mean,
you got to do it now.
Whoever thought they were gonna lose John when he was 40.
Nobody.
You know, now here they are in their early 80s, and it's the idea that any moment, God forbid. I mean, we don't. But
right, God forbid. Yeah, we don't wish them.
No, of course not. But I'm just saying, and anyone that I know who's in their 80s, no matter how healthy they are,
right,
no matter that they're doing jumping jacks on stage, you're not 40 anymore. You're not 20 anymore. You're 80. Right. There's a reality. There's a numerical reality. We may be here for 100 years, but Is Ringo still going to be able to play the drums at 100? Is Paul going to be singing at 100?
Is George going to be at his ticker tape machine?
You know, and there's also, you know, your hearing. I mean, you know, at some of these guys at a certain age, their hearing just goes. There are a few artists out there who they've been fine until, and then all of a sudden one day, you know, Paul Simon said, "My hearing just went."
Simon said.
Nice. No, but really, you know, Paul Simon really did. You know, Paul Simon's hearing just
right
went on him unexpectedly.
Well, I have a question for you guys. We know Paul was the driving force behind this. What happens if Ringo wasn't alive anymore and it was just Paul pushing this through?
Ringo was on the track already.
Well,
Ringo
they redid the
they drum. Did, but Ringo was on the track already.
Right. But it might not have been perfect, let's say.
No, but let's say.
But let's say it was just Paul doing it, and you know, would it be looking at Paul like, oh, look, he's pushing through again, instead of this thing where he's with Ringo, even though Ringo recorded it as house, his drums, you can tell because Bruce Sugar's the engineer, and even in the video, Paul and Ringo aren't in the same room for whatever reason. So I was wondering if Paul was the last man standing, so to speak. Would we be looking at this slightly differently about how, you know, Paul was almost obsessed with getting this done. Like, you know, he has that thing about, if you look back at his history, you know, going back to Hell and Wheels being placed on Band on the Run because Capitol said we can sell 500,000 copies more. He didn't want it there. And eventually now it's a bonus track on the you know, box set. And he's done that other times too, where he goes back, you know, Let It Be Naked was him saying, hey, you know, I didn't like Spector, what he did. This is me, you know, cleaning it up a little bit.
I think it's more acceptable, Rob, that Ringo is alive.
Oh, I think so too. I think so too.
He was the last man standing, God forbid. I think it would have been a much more of a vanity project, even though I think it still is a total Paul vanity project. And I don't say that in a disparaging way. I just think Paul led the charge, because Ringo certainly wasn't going to go, hey, Paul, you want to go back and do Now and Then?
Yeah, yeah.
But Paul, I think Paul wanted to finish it because, as Tony said, Ringo's still playing the drums. Paul still plays a hell of a bass. I love the bass on this song. And some people are saying he's over the top with the bass. Paul is very restrained on this song, by the way. He could have easily made it more of a Paul song. All right. He could have easily added the bridge. And when John sings that dee, 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 Paul could have easily sang something. But I think, as Tony said, his voice is not what it, you know, you don't want to call out Paul's older voice on a song that's supposed to be the last Beatles song. You know, you don't want that paying attention. You don't want that being the focus. You want, you know, John actually being the focus, and that's fine, and all the Beatles. But I don't know. I think it's a good thing that he and Ringo, you know, Ringo said yes, even though, you know, he was on the track already. But I do think, to your point, we would have looked at it a little different if it was just Paul still standing and doing
this. Right, and also I think when Paul isn't, like, there were parts I thought Paul would have added more backing vocals, but I think because of the technology and we hear John's voice so clear,
yeah,
you didn't need to add it. Like on Free as a Bird, you had to.
Oh, but yeah.
Because you're taking this bad, you know, sounding demo and you're adding it on. This, one of the things about the Mal is the fact that it really sounds good. And you can't, you know, you don't have to add as much to cover that up.
You know? Well, we'll see how good it sounds when we finally review the Red and Blue show. Because that's going to be a big factor. Because right now, all we know of the Mal is John's voice from Now and Then.
Right. That's true.
Quite frankly.
Well, we know Love Me
Do. And we know from the Get Back stuff. I mean, obviously.
And Love Me Do was the A-side.
Double A-side, which I think Love Me Do sounds really good.
I think it sounds amazing.
But we'll talk about that with the Red and the Blue. So let's get to the video a little bit. This has been very divisive. A lot of people say it's cheesy. A lot of people said they love it. A lot of people said it actually enhanced the song for them, which I agree.
I agree, too.
And I'll give you a perfect example. My wife loves the Beatles, you know, likes the Beatles because of me, and she liked them even before we met. She doesn't know all of their videos. She doesn't. She's not going to watch the video. She likes the songs. I showed her the video, and she laughed out loud at the John part. She didn't think it was cheesy. She thought it was hysterical because she knows the Beatles humor. She's seen John do stuff. She watched the documentary when John does the wobbly legs when he's holding Sean in the very beginning. So she knows he's always been the quote clown. And then she saw the video and loved it. And she also made mention of George. Oh, George is just doing a two-step here with his guitar. So she thought it was wonderfully done and not cheesy and not undignified, as some people are saying. And not offensive, which other people are saying. I don't get that. I think Peter Jackson, for what he had to work with, and he did a lot of work with the outtakes for Hello Goodbye video, I think he did a beautiful job. And the ending is just killer when they disappear at the end of Hard Day's Night. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful job. I love the fact that they kept Paul and Ringo as 80-year-olds. Tony, like you said, they're 80. I love that fact that they kept them in there. And if anybody, Paul would have probably hated the fact that young Paul was in back of old Paul, but he let it go because
but that was so cool.
Now and Then.
Yeah. And the what I loved was the double Ringo drumming.
Oh,
and, God, and he like, great. And he looks over and it's like, well, there's Ringo. And he's like, it was so well, you know what, thought Rob, out.
We
I
know
was what, very Rob? Impressed with that. I was so happy to see that. And I liked when Paul is behind young Paul's behind old Paul. And he's
what's
like,
perfect
it's almost
about
like he's
that.
Looking in and saying, hey, yeah, this we're going to be in 40 years or 50 years, we're going to be doing this video called Now and Then.
Well, Rob, when Paul is behind Paul, it's the part where he looks into the camera behind Paul and he goes, hello, because it's hello, goodbye.
Right.
He says hello, and it's perfect. And also the part where Ringo is doing the drumming as an 80-year-old now, and George turns to him and puts his hand back and says, there's Ringo, and Ringo's drumming, and then John looks back at him from the hello, goodbye. It's like, whoa. It was beautifully done. It wasn't, to me, it wasn't hokey. And the fact that John is kidding around, or as we say in Hebrew, kibitzing around everywhere, that only added to the fun because he always did that. So if you don't think that was fun, then you're missing the Beatles themselves, because humor was all in everything the Beatles ever did.
Well, when John's directing the orchestra in the way that only John could do,
right?
I'm just laughing. And if you remember when we saw it at the press thing, everyone laughed at that scene.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it was a kind of long laugh, and it sort of almost could have taken away from the listening experience, because it was a funny thing. Because you think of a day in the life, and you see Paul very seriously conducting the orchestra, and then you think of, I thought of that when I saw John doing his little dance and raising his arms, and then there was also the thing about that was they had two of the string players, and they showed them at different times.
Yes.
They're looking at John.
Reacting.
And they're like, what the hell is that? Now, they're not reacting to that.
No.
But the look says, what the hell is that? They have two different people looking ahead, and they show where John is conducting. I thought that was an incredible sight to add into this fun video. But at the same time, as you said at the end, it's a little sad.
Tugs at your heart.
Yeah.
And I think it runs the gamut of emotions. And yes, I will say when John and George first appeared on screen, I was like, oh, I hope this is going to be okay, because I didn't know where it was going.
Yeah. Well.
But when they started doing the John shtick where he's pointing at Paul while Paul's singing or whatever, and then John plays. I mean, he starts playing, and so it's not like he's just pointing. He starts playing, and George has his guitar. So, it wasn't hokey at all. I understand where people say it's cheesy. I do, but maybe I just don't feel that way. I feel it encapsulates who the Beatles were in everything they ever did. It was humor.
I thought when the four of them, during when they're all singing, kind of together. I thought when John's pointing, like you just said, it's almost like it was made for this, It was like, it's like, look what these guys just did. They just finished this off of one of my songs. That was my favorite thing. I want a poster of that shot. I said that before. I will say it again. If you could get me a poster of that, I would take it, because John looks.
What we could do.
Yeah.
You see the posters behind me?
Yeah, I see that.
we'll work on it.
I was very impressed with the video, and it does help the song too, which is what it's supposed to do. It helped understand, the phrase Now and Then, and I miss you and stuff like that. And, I was very impressed by that. It was, Peter, I think that was his first video he ever did. So,
yeah. And it was only 4 minutes. He usually does 8 hours. We said, I think Apple even said, they asked Peter to do it. And Peter said something like, if it's not 8 hours, I can't do it.
And it had no battle sequence either.
That was next. They were going to do the How I Won the War.
Yeah.
It would have been kind of funny. We know at one point there was talk that the four Beatles were going to do Lord of the Rings. Oh, it would have been nice to have just a little, like in the background, the book itself or something. Just a little. Maybe there is.
Or Gollum. Gollum, the character Gollum, just appear on the screen walking past the stage. But Tony, what did you think of the video?
I like the video a lot. Yeah. I mean,
does it enhance it for you?
Does it what?
Did it enhance the song for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think it just made the song a better listening experience. I just totally from the, you know, the minute the video started, once it started getting into the mixing of the eras, I loved it.
Your smile. The only thing I want to say too is that they released a doc on the first, they released a single on the second, they released a video on the third. The only thing I will, and it's a nitpick, so please, it's not a criticism, it's a nitpick, and that's what we do. But I would have hoped that after the 12-minute doc, which was so emotional and so building up, I would have hoped there would have been a black screen and the song would have started. Not even the video, just the song. Because you were so built up, like, oh my God, I heard some of the song in that 12-minute doc and it just brought me to tears. I was hoping that you could hear the song right after, you know, right after the doc ends and they show the Apple 2023, you'd see Paul, ladies and gentlemen, you know, listen to Now and Then, and you could have heard it. They made us wait another day. But it's a nitpick, but it would have been kind of cool because it sort of ruined the anticipation. I know you had to wait 24 hours or whatever it was, probably less than 24 hours, but I really wanted to hear the song that day.
It was, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of when the anthology showed up on ABC. You know, that Sunday, there's the countdown to Free as a Bird. We're all excited. And then the next time the second part airs, they air Real Love. And then the third part, you know, aired on what, Thanksgiving, I guess, or whatever it was. And, you know, I think this release pattern was picked up for this. You know, over 3 days, each day there was something interesting to hear, you know, or see.
Well, Now and Then was supposed to be the lead single for our Anthology 3.
Right, right. And instead, George Martin gets a boatload of money for a beginning, which, you know, which was the only time he ever got credited for a song.
Right.
But guess what? You know, how much money did he make just from that one song?
Yeah, so, well, he did well, but it didn't fit.
No, it didn't. But, you know, at least they gave him something. But I think that the 3 day thing was very cool. I understand they wanted to spread it out a little bit.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, because if the 12-minute thing was 30 minutes, you know, if you actually, you know, probably could have shown it on, you know, a network or something. Especially,
well, it's going to be on PBS the week of November 14th.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, for a full week. It'll be on the United, all U.S. PBS stations. Okay. I'm sure they'll do 12 minutes and then 18 minutes of Pledges, but whatever. Maybe they'll sell the single, you know, give away the single or whatever,
right,
you're doing for the Pledges. But look, you know, it's been one hell of a week, you know, in Beatledom, so to speak. And as a Beatle fan, it's just been crazy. It's been amazing. The one great thing, whether you like the song or not, the Beatles are in the news, no matter what. Yeah. I don't care if you go back and buy Beatles 1 or Meet the Beatles or With the Beatles, whatever you want to do. It's so great to have the Beatles all over the news. So if you love it, great. If you hate it, great. That doesn't mean you're any less of a Beatle fan. It means you're just passionate and you didn't want to, you know, deal with this maybe ruining the legacy. And if you love it, well, guess what? You know, you love it and you have your capper to the Beatles catalog, so to speak. So I'm so glad we got it. And now we just wait as of this for the Red and Blue. And in the future, I'm sure we're going to get Rubber Soul. You know, there's also Mind Games and Band on the Run. And I mean, so the Beatles are never going away. But this is the last song. So
and there's nothing wrong with that either.
No. And I was going to say, you know, that can't be bad. On that note, let's end this. Let's make that
There was a couple of things I wanted to mention.
Okay.
First of all, the song, the line Now and Then, when I first heard the title, I thought of the song My Old Friend from Carl Perkins.
Mm.
And I was wondering, think about me every now and then. That's the line in the song. And that's the song. That's the line that John supposedly said to Paul the last time they met.
Yeah, but Carl Perkins wrote it. Paul didn't.
I know that, but Carl sang it to Paul.
I know.
And then Paul walked out, and he was in tears, and then Linda explains to Carl, because Carl doesn't know what's going on, and then she says, well, that's the last line. How did you know? And Carl's like, what do you mean? Yeah. So I'm wondering if that's part of why there was kind of almost an obsession with Paul finishing this track. By the way, my old friend is on Paul's box set, which, is it? I'm not sure.
No, it's not.
Go. Yeah, that's right, which is out of print.
Right.
So that's part of it. I think it was great that radio actually played it on the radio, and even if it, you don't hear it on classic rock stations or whatever, the fact that there was actually a moment on radio for this, I thought was really cool.
Let's see how long it stays on radio. That's the only problem.
Well, I don't think it
let's
will.
See how long the legs are for this.
I don't think it will, but the fact that that classic rock and other stations on the iHeart network stopped what they were doing for 4 minutes play it, I was very impressed with. And there's also two things. A bootlegger has already put out a bootleg of Real Love, Grow Old With Me, Now and Then, supposedly the original. And then they included the remix versions of Real Love. And the fact that it's out already is really incredible. One of our friends has already ordered it. You know who it is.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed with that. The bootleggers were literally 2 minutes behind Apple. And I thought that was very cool. And what was the other thing? Oh, there's already cover versions of this song. The band Apple Jam covered the version that was heard in the Lennon musical with the extrovert, that middle section.
Yeah, I had posted that about a month ago.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that. I only saw it today. Yeah. And then there was another, I didn't get the name of the band, but someone posted on Facebook that they did it more like the 1964 Beatles.
Yeah, I posted that this morning.
It sounds more like Things We Said Today than what the Beatles recorded. So I was very impressed that, and our friend Scott Erickson is already covering it in his act.
Listen, the fact that people are covering Now and Then, good sign for it to be considered, quote, a song in the catalog. So
and I think also the other side of it is that when you're a musician and you play the song, people can say, "Oh, I know that song," because they've heard it. They heard it on the radio. Right. They maybe saw the video, and it's so easy to see the video. You can watch it 10 times in a row if you want.
Yeah.
So, or listen to it 10 times in a row. Go to Spotify, just hit replay, and you can do that. So, I think that's important, like we also should mention that right now the Beatles are beating Taylor Swift in the streaming thing.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, she's the queen of streaming. So,
queen of stream.
So, I would love, next week to find out that Billboard is announcing that, Now and Then is in the top five.
From your mouth to God's ears.
I would be so happy. I'd be so impressed.
We'll see, right?
It means that they have picked up on the new technology. Even though we're CD and record guys, and a lot of our listeners are too, it means that they say, okay, we can't do it the same way we did in 1995. So I was very impressed with that.
All right, well, I'll be honest with you. The last word will be, let's hope, fingers crossed, we look in Billboard next week and it's number one. Forget about top five. Let's hope it's number one. On that note, I have been your moderator for this really interesting Now and Then talk. And we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mitch Axelrod, and joining me has been Tony Triguardo.
Take care, folks.
And Rob Leonard.
Thank you, everyone.
And we cannot wait to review Red and Blue. We'll see you real soon.
Fab 4 Free For All was edited and produced by Tony Triguardo at Word of Mouth Studios in Westbury, New York.
The opening and closing theme is My Dolly by the band The Badge, featuring longtime listener Jeff Slate, available on its debut album Digital Retro and recent Best Of compilation, as well as from the Fab 4 Free For All website.
Thanks for listening to Fab 4 Free For All.